something for the weekend. Good morning, it's Trina Mara. I'm delighted to be talking entertainment again, a word that we probably haven't really heard much about in the last year. Paul Howard is on the line. Hiya, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Good to have you on, because this means that there's stuff happening in the world of entertainment. You'll know Paul as he is the writer of Ross O'Carroll Kelly. And there's a show happening, Paul.
There is. It's really exciting as well. I've missed everything, to be honest, for the last sort of 14, 15 months since the first lockdown, and I especially missed live theatre. And so I'm really excited to tell you that Postcards from the Ledge, the Ross O'Carroll Kelly one-man show, is having its global online premiere this weekend. Rory Nolan, who is the legend writ large, is going to be stepping into Ross O'Carroll Kelly's dubs and treading the boards in the Mermaid Theatre in Bray. It's going to be screened live online. It's not going to be geo-blocked, so anyone in the world can watch it live. And then it's going to be available for a week afterwards on demand.
So a live broadcast tonight, 8 p.m. and then on demand from tomorrow until the 23rd of May. Now, how has the Rossmeister been getting on? Do you know, Paul, not being able to go for pints and the like, do you know?
Yeah, I think the thing he misses most is, you know, because he has to wear the face mask all the time now, he just misses people checking him out. But most of what I've been writing involving Ross over the last year, they've kind of been domestic dramas, you know. So I think, like the rest of us, he's sick to the teeth of banana bread and getting up early in the morning to do the Joe Wicks workout with the kids and all those kind of things. So he's just, you know, he has his 6 p.m. tonight appointment for Brown Thomas, you know, just for that little bit of normality coming back.
Yeah, because I say Ross would be the type now, he would like to go to get his fake tan done, and he presumably normally would have a cleaner in the house every day looking after him and the family and wouldn't have to lift a finger. How has he coped at all?
He's looking at that Hoover, wondering which end he uses on the floor, you know. that's where Ross is out at the moment.
Yeah. But
thankfully, the Postcards from the Ledge is set in the future, in 2029, when COVID is just a distant memory. So the story is that, you know, Ireland is in the midst of another economic boom, and Ross is running Hook, Line and Sinker, the estate agency. He's about to turn 50 and life is good. The only cloud on his horizon is that his daughter, Honor, is about to get married to a man he doesn't approve of. And he's told her that he's not going to the wedding. So on the morning of the wedding, someone rings the offices of Hook, Line and Sinker and tells them they want him to put a valuation on a house in Glenageary Crescent in Sallynoggin. And it's only when he arrives at the house that he realizes it's the home he spent his childhood in. So that kind of sends him on this journey of remembrance through happy times and sad times, and just brings the past, the present and the future all together.
And Rory, he's played Ross for 14 years. So there must be...
He's been Ross since the very beginning, yeah.
There must be part of him that, number one, he probably can't go anywhere without somebody calling him Ross. And then he must almost feel like he's a bit like Ross. It's kind of ingrained in him now.
Well, if you've ever met Rory Nolan, you would know he's very like Ross. To the point where when I'm writing the Ross O'Carroll Kelly books now, I see and hear Rory. And that's a testament really to how good an actor he is and how much he's made the role his own. Rory is from Monkstown. He went to school in Monkstown. He grew up in Killiney. So he's not a million miles away from Ross in terms of his upbringing, let's say. But it's funny, when he first read for the part of Ross, you know, we were in the Gaiety Theatre, and he stood up on the stage and just completely blew us away. And I just said to myself, that's Ross. I'm actually looking at the living, breathing representation of Ross. And then a very good friend of Rory's, who's also an actor, he was reading for the part next. And he told me afterwards, he said, I actually just found I was doing an impression of Rory Nolan. So he asked the director, Jimmy Fay, he said, are you seeing Rory Nolan for this part? And Jimmy said, yeah, we just saw him a few minutes ago. And the guy just said, all right, good luck. And
then no point wasting your time. Yeah.
He knew Rory was just made for the part.
It's unusual, though, isn't it, for an actor to play a part for such a long time? Like, was he delighted to do that, though? Because, again, for actors, work can dry up sometimes. But at the same time, a lot of actors kind of are afraid of being typecast, is the word I was looking for, typecast. And they like to do other things. How does he feel about still being Ross 14 years on?
Rory is one of those actors who is just never out of work. because he's just so good at what he does. But he's also incredibly versatile. I've seen Rory do, you know, Oscar Wilde. I've seen him do Shakespeare. I've seen him do Beckett. There isn't a theatre stage in this country that hasn't seen him at some point, you know, in just a variety of different roles. He can do absolutely anything. And Ross is something I suppose he gets to do every sort of 3 or 4 years. So it's not like he's not living with Ross's voice in his head like I am all the time. He does, you know, he does other work and he does extraordinary work. But what's exciting about this show is this was the fourth play in which he's played Ross. But this play, it's a one-man show. So he not only plays the part of Ross, he does the voices of all the other characters. You'll see him on the stage impersonating Ronan, his mother Fionnuala, his father Charles, Surika. He does all of these voices. But what's really extraordinary is the show is 2 hours long. He handles all of these kind of changes of character, like relating entire conversations between 2 and 3 characters without dropping a note. You know, yeah. The impersonations are absolute note perfect. And he handles all the emotional gear changes up and down. There's pathos in the piece. There's laughter in the piece. And he does it superbly. Like every time we put this show on, we had 2 runs in Dublin and then we did a bit of a nationwide tour. We went to Cork and Limerick and Galway. Every time we put it on, he got a standing ovation every night. So people who decide to buy tickets for this, for tonight, they're going to see an absolute world-class actor and a masterful performance by him.
He must be knackered when he does a show, when he comes off stage, because there's so much in it. And I don't know how somebody could remember that amount of lines without having a quick look or thinking about something while somebody else takes over on stage.
Yeah, I don't. I have to say, I just bow to people with his kind of talent, you know, because it's one thing to write it, you know, me sitting alone in my office to write lines, but to be able to not just remember them, but to perform them and sell them to an audience. And quite often he's saying the most appalling things as Ross O'Carroll Kelly, because let's be honest, he's not the most likable character in the world. But he takes the audience with him and people are cheering for Ross at the end, which I think is really interesting, because when I started writing Ross first, I kind of tried to make him to be a bit of a kind of hateful character. But people have kind of warmed to him over the years. I don't altogether understand why that's happened. But when I see Ross as performed by Rory Nolan on the stage, I get it a bit more. I understand why people want him to win, even though he's an anti-hero.
I know you told me the story before, Paul, about how you came up with Ross in the first place. Can you remind us, was it on a dart or something where there was other boys coming from rugby or something like that? Can you remind us what that story was?
Yeah, I was getting on the dart in Bray and the carriage, I noticed most of the carriages were full, but the last carriage at the end, there was hardly anyone in it. There was maybe 13 or 14 guys in blazers. And I pressed the buttons and the doors opened. And as I went to step on, one of them put his hand on my chest and said, "Sorry, dude, this is a rock carriage." So that was kind of one of the inspirations. There was also a kid at a rugby match who I heard say to his father, he just played for the senior cup team. And I heard him say to his father, "I don't give a bleep how you think I played. Just crack open the wallet, dude."
No.
So they were kind of two of the inspirations, but there were many like that over the years. I think growing up, as I did, you know, in Dublin, you couldn't really avoid those kind of Ross O'Carroll Kelly characters because they were kind of everywhere.
And where were you from, Paul? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ballybrack, which is in South Dublin, but I suppose it's very different to the world of Ross O'Carroll Kelly. You know, I grew up on a council estate in Cromlech Fields, and we weren't playing rugby growing up, put it that way.
And I know that you love a theme as well, Paul. So, I mean, you've had, give us a rundown of some of the themes you've written about over the years and what you have up your sleeve now. I'm assuming COVID has to come in somewhere, does it?
I don't know. You know, for the last year and a bit, I've been writing in the column almost exclusively about COVID. It's just cast such a dark shadow over our lives. It's kind of hard to write a column at the moment without referencing it, you know, especially because, as I said earlier, it's really curtailed Ross's social activities quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know, as he says himself, Tinder is a wasteland these days, you know, but I don't think I'm going to write a COVID book. A lot of the COVID columns that I wrote are contained in this a new book of columns that just came out a few weeks ago called Rock of Ages. And it's a collection of all the best of the Irish Times columns over the last 20 years. There's quite a few of the COVID columns at the end of that. But as for writing a whole book about COVID, I don't think I will. I mean, you know, really, my books are satirical, but I hope they're funny, you know, and I want them to be funny. I want people to laugh at them. But I just don't really feel that this period of our lives is something we'll look back on with any sense of nostalgia or happiness or anything, you know. So I think I'm probably going to do some kind of jump cut in the story and I'd cut out 18 months of our lives and just age rough suddenly.
The titles of your books as well are always very good. Do you come up with them yourself or does that take almost as long as writing a chapter?
Sometimes more easily than others, you know. My wife Mary is really good at coming up with titles. She's come up with quite a few of them. But sometimes I'll know a book title for 2 years before I write the book. For instance, there's one called Mamma Mia, and I knew I was going to write a book called Mamma Mia for 2 years beforehand. But then there are other books like Keeping Up with the Kalashnikovs, where the title came very, very late in the day. In that case, it was so late in the day that we actually had a different title on the cover of the book just as it was about to go to press. And then it was called Raiders of the Lost Dork. And then we got cold feet about the title and we all went back to the drawing board and we just basically gave ourselves the night to think about a new title.
Yeah.
By the morning, I came up with that one and then the printing press rolled. But we literally held the press because we decided we weren't happy with the title.
For you as well, you must have to be very up to date with the things that people are talking about and like that, the telly shows, so that they are relevant, the names. Like even the Braywatch one was funny, wasn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I read newspapers and I read magazines and I watch a lot of television. So I suppose I try to be as clued in as I can, especially to pop culture. But it's kind of hard for me, you know, because I'm 50 now. I turned 50 in January.
Oh, I'm sorry, Paul. I'm going to have to end the interview now. We don't speak to people who are over 50. Sorry. We didn't check your ID beforehand. Go on, tell me. You're 50 now. Go on.
But yeah, it's as you know, as you get older, it does become more and more difficult to, you know, be clued into the minds of what goes on. And, you know, the heads of teenagers, for instance, like Ross's daughter, Honor, is a teenager now. So, like, her world is just a total mystery to me, you know. So that kind of stuff, I have to actually actively research it. You know, the world of TikTok and all that kind of thing, which is just a mystery to me. I don't get it at all.
I haven't a breeze and I try and act cool like I know, but I don't. I really don't.
Yeah.
But you must be still, Instagram and things like that, you would use, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I use Instagram. I like Instagram a lot because it's less combative than Twitter. You know, I find with Twitter, there's an awful lot of... you can't really voice an opinion without, you know, opening up an argument for lots of strangers who you don't know to come and attack you. But Instagram seems to be just this happy, sunlit place where everybody seems to be in a good mood all the time. So I'm much more comfortable with that than I think I am with Twitter.
Yeah. Have you mixed at all with people over the last year, Paul, or do you work kind of on your own all the time?
Well, I work mostly on my own and always have. We have a house in Avoca in Wicklow, and that's where we spent most of the last year. We haven't really seen anyone. My dad, like my family, for instance, you know, my brothers, I think I've seen one of my brothers once in the last year. I've seen my father twice. So it's been really hard. They've been very good about doing what they're told and not seeing people. Probably, you know, even when we opened up, they stuck with the lockdown restrictions. Like my dad would go out very early in the morning to do his walk and then he'd go home and stay in his apartment all day because he's just worried about getting it, you know. Mm-hmm. And but it's been hard because we haven't seen each other as a family. And that's what I'm looking forward to most about, you know, about getting the vaccine and just this kind of renewed sense that things are starting to come back again, starting with the hairdresser's reopening.
I know.
Can finally stop cutting my own hair. That's just
how are you looking right now, Paul? Be honest now. How are you looking if you were to look in the mirror right now?
Not great, but look, none of us are looking our best at the moment. I tell a lie. I've taken the scissors to my hair a couple of times, but Mary has been mostly cutting my hair and doing it really well, I have to say. You know, which is, we got one of those razors. And there was one cut where I think we put the wrong blade on it. And I said to her, look, you know, I would have you up for assault if I didn't love you so much. Because
yeah. I did it once. We got the razor too.
Did she?
We bought the razor as well. I did my husband's once, and funnily enough, he hasn't asked me to do it again over the last year. I don't know why that is. I think
it's a real test of a relationship, isn't it?
There was a real trust issue there. And he said to me, "Well, would you trust me to do your hair?" And I was like, "Get away! I wouldn't even trust him to brush my hair," you know. So look, we're looking forward to having some entertainment back in our lives. When do you think that theatres are realistically going to be back, Paul?
I don't know. It's really hard to tell. I suppose it just depends. I mean, the signs are really good with the vaccine. It does seem to be working. And I think things will come back with limited numbers. Indoor events will come back first with limited numbers. It's really difficult to make theatre work, especially if you've got a big cast, unless you can fill every seat in a theatre. So if it's every fourth seat, it's just really difficult to make theatre pay in that way. Mm. And also, you know, for the atmosphere, I think you need full theatres. I'm guessing it's going to be sometime next year, but we might get some kind of limited theatre in the autumn.
Yeah, let's hope. Okay, well, where can we get this now? So the live broadcast tonight, 8 o'clock, and on demand from tomorrow as well until the 23rd of May. Ross O'Carroll Kelly having a one night stand, and you're invited. Where can we actually access that?
Well, if you go to www.landmarkproductions.ie, and it's available there, and it's €20, so the whole family can sit around and enjoy a night of theatre for the price of a ticket, essentially. And it's very exciting because we've heard from people in Australia where they are allowed to meet each other again, Irish people living in Sydney and Melbourne who are having watching parties to watch the show live, and then other people in the UAE, expat Irish people, England, New York. That's really exciting for us, the fact that it's not geo-blocked, so it really is a global event.
Well, the best of luck with that, Paul, and I hope to see you soon in studio,
Thanks so much. In person.
I haven't done an interview face-to-face in about 15 months, and I don't know how I'm coping at all, but it'll be good to see you when we finally do get to catch up again. Thanks so much for taking our call today. Cheers, Paul.
Pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you.
This is Something for the Weekend. It's Ireland's Classic Hits.